This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hi, my name's Albert, and I'm from the Back of the Nest Preview Podcast. People used to laugh at me for having particularly hairy testicles. And to be honest, it didn't feel good. My comfort levels were low, and my confidence was even lower. To take matters into my own hands, I tried to self-groom at home using whatever I could find lying around the house. The wife's lady shave when she wasn't looking. An old bread knife at the back of the cutlery drawer. A potato peeler in the camping tin. Needless to say, the results weren't pretty. The combination of matted hair and blood resembled something like a tragic clash of heads on the training pitch between Mila Jedinak or Joe Ledley. It was grim. Luckily, that's all changed, thanks to Manscaped.com. With the Lawnmower 3.0, all my worries are taken care of. 2 minutes with the Lawnmower 3.0, it's more like Attilio Lombardo and Andy Johnson, bearing down on goal. Smooth as you like. An impeccable finish. And you can have that too. Just go to Manscaped.com, select the Lawnmower 3.0, and apply the code BOTN at checkout for 20% off and free shipping. That's manscaped.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Back of the Nest World preview and the match report yet again, as Hambo and Hesketh join me once more to look back against the victory against Newcastle at St James's Park and then looking ahead to our upcoming victory against Leeds United.
The Match Report, sponsored by Pitch Sport, available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Upcoming victory. I'm getting way too optimistic now. Yes, Hambo, you with us again?
I am indeed. Somehow I'm still doing more podcasts, more watch-alongs. I've got Palace fatigue, but hey, this is what I signed up for.
and Hesketh, we're sans Albert yet again.
I think we should just start making a point when he actually shows up. Every week we're like, Albert's not here again. So yeah, I think it's more likely to be a fanfare when he bothers than when he doesn't.
Yeah, full of excuses, and he's just working his way down the list of why he can't make it.
Yeah, terrible.
What was it? He's speaking to the producer of the upcoming Stiltman movie. So. I mean, that's just not true. It's just mere speculation. But we'll get into looking to the victory against Newcastle and then ahead to the game against Leeds, which is Monday night, quite far away from here at this point at time of recording. But a few things I want to touch on before we get started with the Newcastle victory. And well, it's related to Newcastle. Did you guys see Jean-Philippe Mateta's video for the build-up to the game? So it's this whole clip where, you know, it's kind of zooms in on a few things. It's like his game day, clicks on the dressing room and it shows his shirt. And then it clicks on the stadium. And Hambo, it was a screenshot of St. James's Park, Exeter.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can, you know, he's obviously got the dream. We all want to play in St James's Park in Exeter, don't we? So, you know, he's been dreaming about that since he was a young boy in France. But he'll have to wait. He'll have to wait for that opportunity when we've not been knocked out of a cup competition at the first time of asking, won't he? So, but look, easy mistake to make, eh?
Well, I imagine, Hesketh, that it wasn't JP who was sitting there making this on his phone, like doing his own video editing. It was someone else, but it's a little bit worrying that someone's getting paid money and they think, oh, yeah, that's the sort of stadium that would be in the Premier League.
Do you know who I reckon it was? I reckon he used to be employed by Christian Benteke. and his previous was saying Benteke was in Burnley.
Burnley Lee. I don't even know how to say Burnley with an L on the end.
I reckon he got binned off by Benteke and Mateta's picked him up. And he's...
can I just say, I think the more confusing part is the fact that he's put a message out expecting like he might get some game time.
Just put a picture of a bench, JP. That's all you need.
Yeah, well, I did say he's joking around on Twitter that he's been signed for the under-23s. we'll start to phase him in when his loan deal's over and it becomes permanent. So, and another thing that's tickled my fancy this week, Hesketh, James Ward-Prowse is on the end of another 9-0 thrashing.
We love it. apparently he's the only player who's played every... one of the minutes for both 9-0s in Southampton's defeats. And I saw a picture of him with his hands on his head after, I presume, the 9th goal went in. And it's the best thing I've seen in a long time.
On a sort of footballing note, Hambo, twice now they've gone down to 10 men early and then get thrashed 9-0. Is that just living by the sword, dying by the sword in the style of football that Hasenhüttl wants to play? Or is that, it's just completely naive for it to happen twice, isn't it?
I think so. It's a hard one to explain. That, you know, you look at that whole game and that you've got to say that they were quite unlucky in some ways. It was a stupid challenge, but, you know, everything just seemed to conspire against them. And you do get games like that. I mean, you know, it happened for us when we had 11 men on the pitch against Liverpool. You know, but I think had that been, you know, I was about to say had that been Roy, would have shut up shop, but I've argued against myself there. And, then all of a sudden it drifted into my mind that we lost 3-0 against 10 men after Villa. So I completely argued against myself, but it does seem naive. It does seem, you know, it's such a weird thing to concede 9 goals, but to do it twice. It's inexplicable, really. And the guy's a good manager. You know, he's done a tremendous job with Southampton. So for them to get that level of a spanking twice is pretty impressive. But they used it last time as a bit of a springboard, didn't they? So, I mean, I hope they don't again, because any misery in James Ward-Prowse's direction is good in my book.
Right, before we go any further, my mouth is dry. I've got to do this.
Damn, I'm thirsty. I want a beer. What about you? You want a beer? I'm going to leave you three to it, man.
9% is usually not a good idea for a Wednesday night recording.
Jesus, that isn't beer. That's a spirit.
It's a stout, or it's a porter, actually. It's Imperial Irish Cream Marshmallow Porter from Tiny Rebel. And on the can, it's a stormtrooper holding a bottle of Bailey's, basically. So let me give it a go. Well, yeah, it's pretty good, actually. It's just really super sweet. Hambo, you're having half a can of beer, apparently.
Well, that was my claim for a half can. But you know me, I'm one of those boring people off carbs at the minute. So I actually have a fridge full of really nice beer that I can't drink. And you mentioned Tiny Rebel there. I love Tiny Rebel. Everything that they've ever done, I've really enjoyed. And the idea of a marshmallow stout is just heaven right now. But it's going to be a long, long time until I can drink that. They do, I can't remember, it's like a raspberry sour. I've forgotten the name of it. It's like framboozy or something like that.
Mm.
It's just incredible. And it's so sour, it puts your teeth on edge. And I really like that.
Yeah, I had a fizzy cola one from them a couple of weeks ago. I tend to really like some of it. There's only one beer I've not liked of theirs so far, which I've had. And that was the Shakedown, which tasted like... no shampoo or something. I don't know what was wrong with that one. And Hesketh, I never know, is it water, is it red wine, or is it Dos Equis? It's a I'm on mute kind of beer.
I'm back. That's the second time I've muted today. I spent about 2 minutes talking in a team meeting at work and had been muted. And to be honest, it was probably for the best. What I was going to say was, I was going to mix it up and have, my wife bought some Topo Chico hard seltzer, which is this drink that she likes from Texas, where she's from. And it's like, you know, sour cherry seltzer. Mm. But actually, I didn't do that because I'm boring, so I'm drinking water.
we'll try and bring in the big bucks on that water sponsorship for you at some point, mate. We'll get
Thames Water, if you're listening.
Indeed. Right. I think we'll start with we'll lead into Newcastle by saying that Jairo Riedewald signed the new contract that's been announced today, which keeps him at the club to 2024. Hambo, you want to take this? Obviously delighted that this has happened, all of us, I think, particularly after performance last night. And to sort of in context, take us away with the Newcastle match report.
Yeah, certainly will. Look, it's great news. Again, another one of those things that was kind of whirling around in rumours that it happened quite some time ago. But the fact that it's confirmed that he's signed on the dotted line is till 2024, which is absolutely right. You know, he's only 24 years old, I think. And you know, obviously he's been with us quite a while, and he's, you know, he's not started enough games, let's face it, but the fact that he's you know, he's had such an influence on the side of late is extremely encouraging. And you know, the fact that the club are showing that faith in him and again thinking about the next few seasons and what he might be able to do as he continues to improve and grow, it's just, you know, it's a great feeling that we've managed to secure him, because, you know, those performances won't go unnoticed. His technical ability certainly won't go unnoticed. He's an absolute Rolls Royce. I was thinking about Roy again. Rolls Royce of a player. We need more like him, to be quite honest with you, because that's what will change that style. That's what will bring us up to that next level, I think.
I'll tell you what, I get the impression that Roy, that's the one I'm looking for. I get the impression Roy sees him more like a larder for some reason.
Yeah,
Morris Minor.
I'm sure we'll talk about it. I'm sure there's, you know, on all of our minds Roy was asked about Jairo, wasn't he? And the first thing he said was, "Yeah, he's great. Yeah, we really need James McCarthy and James MacArthur back, though." You're like, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, it's his shit version of Mason Mount.
But anyway, I suppose we best get cracking, really. So Jairo was the changes in the lineup. Jairo and Cahill were the two. So Jairo coming in from McCarthy. You know, you want to say great move. You know, Jairo suited the game, but would he have started, Terence, do you think, if McCarthy was fit?
Well, no, I think it's very clear that he wouldn't have, because he talked after the match about, you know, really desperately wanting at least one of the Jameses back. So no, he wouldn't have started. But that's, I guess, on the flip side, trying to be not miserable about it all. That's what you have a squad for, right? You have a squad for when players are out injured, and you rely on them that you've got them to do the work in training to be ready and available to go when they are. I mean, we raved about Riedewald enough last week. Another game here with 90%+ passing accuracy. Just keeps the ball really well. I mean, don't know how he didn't get an assist to his name, which we'll get on later in the game. Just a brilliant all-round performance. But no, you know, I don't want to slag off James McArthur, because James McArthur's done a fantastic job for us down the years. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you put James McArthur on the field, he's going to do a really good job for you. But Riedewald's got something else about him, hasn't he?
Yeah, there was a stat on Twitter, Hesketh, which was that it said list of players who've misplaced no more than 6 passes in the Premier League this season, and the list was Jairo Riedewald. Thoughts?
Yeah, not surprised. I mean, surprising insofar as he plays for Palace, but not surprising for anyone who's seen him play for Palace, probably. I completely agree with Terence. I think he's a player that gives a lot to the team, both defensively and going forward. And his ability to pass is a big part of that. But I think his ability to get up and down the pitch as well is a really big deal. And you know, seeing him score his goal yesterday, it wasn't a surprise that it was Gyro running onto that, because he does link the play really well and he does get up and down a great deal. And I think he's got a good engine on him, and I don't think we really sort of think about that too much because he's such a classy player. Or maybe, you know, his running style doesn't, a bit like Eze, doesn't look like he's powering past people when he is. But I think he gives a huge amount to the team. And whilst it's a shame that he probably only got in because of the injuries, it's great to see him doing everything he can whilst he's in the team. You know, he's been brilliant this season when he's played.
Yeah, definitely. And it was interesting with the announcement of the contract. There was a lot of talk about the fact that not only is he a really popular and positive person at the club, but there was a definite angle that was put forward of the fact that isn't it great how the coaching staff have worked with him to bring him up to the kind of physical demands of the Premier League. Yeah, I wonder if there's an angle there that's being pushed. But hey, but that, you know, let's say that probably is the case and did have to happen anyway, because, you know, he did turn up from Ajax as a very cultured player, and the Premier League is a very much faster, more physically demanding league than you know, the Dutch First Division. So, you know, he has got his head down and worked incredibly hard when not getting many opportunities. Had opportunities to leave the club plenty of times, but he's refused to do so. And I always feared that's because he was thinking, let me just get this contract done here and then I can take my pick of a team that'll appreciate me. But the fact he's signed on the dotted line for a new contract suggests that it really was him getting down, believing that he would play in this team and would get chances. So all credit to him. The other change, Eskif, was Kehwin for Kiate. And I ask you first, because I know we were talking before we started recording about your fears when the lineup was announced of having Cahill and Dan together, which probably matched the fears of a lot of people. But I suppose, yeah, part of me is, you know, what were you thinking at the time it was announced? And, you know, and again, does this really highlight perhaps the sudden concern we've all got in the centre-back places?
Yeah, when I saw the team, I wasn't filled with hope, mostly because the thought of sort of Callum Wilson darting in between him and Dan didn't really fill me with confidence. About a minute and a half, 2 minutes in, my confidence was still not growing when we went 1-0 down. But I think they both played really well. I think my concern with Cahill and Dan is the sort of pace, which Newcastle really didn't do a huge amount of work with, which is great. And I've talked on the pod before about how I'm not too confident with Cahill marking at set pieces, which is a weird thing to say considering his pedigree, but I stand by it. But like I said beforehand, you know, if he's going to attack our set pieces the way that he did yesterday, then, you know, I have a lot less of a problem. I guess I was a bit surprised. So I think Roy said that he wanted to give Cech a rest, which is fine. I do wonder what's happened to Martin Kelly, because he's just permanently on the bench. And I must say, I mean, this is with, you know, with hindsight, Dan and Cahill were good. But before the game, I was just thinking, why is Kelly not getting a game? You know, he's a good centre-half. Yeah, he hasn't played as much, but I'd feel more confident with quicker players with Kelly. But to be fair, Dan and Cahill both played pretty well yesterday. So, you know, with hindsight, it was an all right change.
I thought Cahill, in his post-match, actually gave a lot of insight, because about 2 minutes before he scored, I tweeted that his form's falling off a cliff, and depicted this by showing a building actually falling off of a cliff. And then, of course, he repaid me very quickly by scoring. But he talks after the game about not having a pre-season because of his injury, having a lot of niggly injuries along the way. And fingers crossed, that is why it's taken him some time to get back up to speed and get some form under his belt. And if it is just game time, and then, you know, he turns into the Gary Cahill we had last season before he got injured, then I'm a lot more comfortable than I was, say, 36 hours ago about our centre backs. You know, where it's been a position where we've been so comfortable for so long, but now, you know, we're playing and I want to call Kiati a makeshift centre back because he's not. He has played there a lot in his career, a lot more than commentators would like to make out. You know, he captained his country to a final defeat in the African Cup of Nations at centre back, for example. But we've been comfortable there for so long, and then it's all been looking a bit ropey. But yeah, if Cahill can get some game time and then return to the player he was, and that injury hasn't affected him as much as we all thought, then that's only a positive thing.
Yeah, it was interesting. We were talking about it in the watch along that he seemed to be, because obviously, yeah, as he said, he had an injury, didn't get a pre-season. But when he first came back in that side, he looked fine. It was only after the injury where Dunk did all that damage to his shin that when he came back, it looked, you know, as you said, you know, the falling off a cliff thing was absolutely apt. But yeah, fingers crossed, that's him turning things around for sure. Let's talk about the opening goal, because it was a, you know, it was a really poor start for Palace in the game. You know, the kind of energy was gone. We started with a 4-4-2 when we seemed to pick a team that would have suited the same as we did Wolves in the first half with a 4-2-3-1, and that's what I expected to see. But straight away, it was a 4-4-2, and we just never got going. Newcastle came out of the blocks relatively quickly, but you know, not that quickly. And when you look at the first goal, it does start with Dan being done by Amor down on the left flank, just ball hooked over his head. And we all know Dan can't really turn particularly quickly, to be generous to him. But so that was a good move, but the ball goes into the box, and obviously it's only Wilson in the box. You've got, excuse me, Fraser sort of lurking just to the side, I think it is. But it's only Wilson in the box. And as soon as that ball goes in, you know, PVA sprints into the box to get behind Wilson. You've got Cahill standing in front of him, but off him, if you like. Dan and Klein and Luca, the three of them, are all moving towards Wilson. And then Gyro comes sprinting in, and he's sort of going between Wilson and Fraser. And I'm assuming that he's trying to pick out that, you know, in case Wilson heads it down to Fraser, because he's not seen Shelby behind him. So you've got six Palace players in the box and one Newcastle player in the box. And straight away, Shelby's just been able to walk off of Ayew, wander out to the edge of the area and just call for it. And great strike, you have to say, from Voldemort. But, you know, it's something that we should have done better on. Now, Terence, I know Gyro said after the match that, you know, he was really angry for not closing it down. But, you know, Gyro got a lot of blame there, but surely it's wider than that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's Dan's completely slow to react. Klein makes a complete hash of going towards the man. He follows the man out when he perhaps shouldn't have, because he was never getting there. Then Dan misses it. I think it's something that doesn't happen 5 minutes later. I think once people are up to speed in the game and they've sort of got everything going, it was just where it was right at the start of the game. I think they just caught us cold a bit, and there wasn't any, you know, we've been switching our centre backs a lot recently. So these, you know, Dan and Cahill once again forming a new partnership at the back there. It's just that sort of confusion comes, and I don't think Gyro should certainly be taking loads of stick for it. Maybe he could have gone in a bit more full-blooded on Shelby and to try and get the block in, but then, you know, you miss the ball, your studs are up and you go through shin, and you get sent off in the second minute. Is a lot worse than conceding the first goal, as it would turn out.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Heskiff, what do you think then? If you've got a position where, is it like Terence says, where it's the players, they're just starting the game, so everyone's not quite settled yet, you know, new partnership. But when you've got your two central midfielders running into the box to make two extra centre-backs rather than picking up the midfield players, is that a problem with the coaching, or is that a problem with the players? Because, you know, we're quick to blame the manager at times, but surely he's not asked them to do that. That's the players not doing the right things.
I agree. I think it's maybe a bit of overcompensation, a little bit too far the wrong way. You know, like you say, it started off with Dan sort of going for a ball and never really going to be able to get it, and then everyone's sort of pulled out of position a little bit, everyone's a bit behind it, and then, like you say, people just sort of piled in the area to the point where we had no one who hadn't piled in the area. I don't think that's a coaching thing. I think that's just one of those things where everyone's trying to cover the bloke next to him, maybe, and it ended up with Shelby being completely on his own and smashing it in. And like you say, it's a shame, because I think with Newcastle having just won a game after so long, and playing so badly, the last thing you want to do is give them an early goal and get their tails up to what you would think would be them continuing on the form of the last game. Thankfully, it didn't turn out that way. But it was a really, really slow start from us, a really sluggish way to begin the game.
Yeah, I think my only concern about it is you know, we see every week, really, the kind of uncharacteristic panic at the back. I mean, thinking about set pieces, we've talked about all of us across all the pods and the watch-alongs for so long. Why defensively do we seem to panic so much? There seems to be every game, you know, 6-7 occasions where everyone's kind of hacking away in the box, trying desperately to get the ball clear. There's no real calm heads in there. And perhaps the only time there was a calm head was when Kiarte took a ridiculous touch and gave the ball away for us to concede against, help me out here, City, maybe? I don't know. My head hurts. But anyway, you know, I worry about the mentality there. I really do. And why we are quite so panicked. But it probably comes from a good place of the team being really committed to trying to, you know, shut the door pretty quickly on our opposition and try not to keep conceding stupid goals. But yeah, you just probably want some more calm heads there. And it just feels weird when you've got that level of experience in a back four. That's you know, pretty much the most experienced back four we can put out, isn't it? And still there's panic in there. But yeah, we rallied well, as you say, really good response. So 15, maybe 20 minutes, I think that we just looked second best. Newcastle had all of the ball and we just really struggled to get a grip. But just, you know, something clicked a little bit. You know, I think we talked about it. Gyro definitely got angry. And I think a few of the players started to build confidence. We started to play more one touch, started to move them about a little bit because they're quite a static team. You know, Bruce does a similar thing to Hodgson. They you know, they went one up and they gradually kind of sat back, tried to fill the spaces and sort of invited us on. And we took that opportunity and really pressed them. And that, the first goal, you just can't really praise it enough because the move before it was excellent. Some brilliant one-touch play. I think, you know, it ended with Luca exchanging passes. We put it out to PVA, PVA to Eze, Eze back to PVA, drilled it across the box. It came back out to Gyro and Terence. Gyro strike, tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, the move, as you say, was fantastic building up to it, and that's Roy Ball at his best. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to create those openings for cutbacks to strikers, and there was a couple of people running in, and obviously it falls onto the edge of the box, and Heskiv talks about him getting up and down the pitch earlier, and he's run onto it, and it's just such a pure strike. But yeah, it's not like he's followed his foot through or anything. It's one of those ways where he kind of stuns it, but it just absolutely flies off of his boot, perfect connection, and as you say, harbouring some of that anger from not closing his man down for the goal. And does the goalie save it? Maybe it goes through his hands. I mean, Darlow's a pretty good goalkeeper, but there's so much pace on it, he might just parry it into the net, but the deflection obviously helps you out and takes it in, and it's certainly an unfortunate deflection because it takes away from the purity of the strike. And if it just flies in straight off his boot, it looks a whole lot better. But you know, you take it. And I said back, it must be several pods ago now, that I feel like it's coming with some of the play that we're playing down the flanks, but we've been picking up injuries and we've been chopping and changing a lot, so we can't get any sort of fluidity going. But you know, we have the players to play that sort of style of football with the quick one touch passing and interplay, and the 1-2 between Eze and PVA is great. Like, the weight of pass from Eze is just unbelievable. Yeah, certainly love to be seeing more of that, Heskiff.
Yeah, I was just thinking, talking of, you know, having an opinion before something happens. When PVA ran onto that ball before Jara's goal and did the sort of cut back to the penalty area and it went to a Newcastle player, I was halfway through shouting at the telly, just put it in the fucking 6-yard. Never mind.
Yeah, well, do exactly that. Let it drop to Gyro all the time now.
Yeah.
So it was apparently the fastest strike in the Premier League this season, 71 miles per hour. And Heskiff, he hit it with his eyes closed. There's a couple of really good pictures as well. One of it, someone said, did he do a no-look shot because his head was turned when he hit it? but, I mean, that's just technique, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's from many years of playing in the Ajax youth system, I imagine. I mean, just everything he does with the football, he must look at some of the players around him on a daily basis on that training ground and just think, how have I ended up here? But yeah, I mean, I'm at risk of becoming a dry Roodevelle fanboy here. I'm going to be worse than Heskey with Clinton Morrison, so I should probably stop talking about him, to be fair.
Well, I think you want to give an excuse to Andros that maybe he had his eyes closed when he missed that open goal. But...
Well, it was raining again, so I reckon his hair probably got in his eyes, to be fair.
Do you know what? That got in my head as well on the watch along, and I had to stop myself from saying it because his hair did really flatten, and I hadn't really spent too much time noticing that. I try not to look at hair because of jealousy reasons, but... He looked a very, very sad state with the floppy hair after the ball didn't go in. We are talking about that now. We will come back to the Cahill goal, but let's talk about that miss, because I laugh because Andros in the previous game he was sort of getting the ball by the horns and moving around the pitch, trying to get people going and all this kind of stuff. And then Roy took him off. And I was joking at that point and said, yeah, that's what happens if you move out of position. Roy will sub you. So then Gyro runs all the way through, puts a fantastic ball across for Andros's miss, which, yeah, we will focus on. But the very next thing that happens is Gyro gets subbed. Don't go outside of your midfield area, Gyro. You know, Roy will sub you. It's what happens. I'm joking, of course. You know,
maybe.
Kind of half joking. It put a shift in, you know. But, yeah, I mean, the miss was a bad one, and it didn't cost us, but... You know, you've seen players do that, but it gets worse every time you see it because he's weak foot. Maybe is that what we got?
Well, he's one of those players though that likes to claim to be two footed, right? So I don't think with Andros Townsend, who takes corners with both his feet, can be saying that's his weaker foot and that's why he's missing from there. It's just not the case with Andros Townsend. It's just made a hash of it, hasn't he? Maybe you can blame the weather conditions because it was windy and raining. Maybe that's to do with it. But no, you've got to be putting that away. And you say it didn't cost us. That's, you know, there are people that it did cost, unfortunately. So, Nathan CPFCD on Twitter had Gary Cahill to score any time and Crystal Palace to win 3-1 at 76-1. So,
wow.
He just tweeted his bet, which was a £5 bet, saying Andros with a crying emoji. Not a crying laughing emoji, that's for sure.
No. Hesketh, there was some screenshots of some real nasty abuse at Andros for that as well, though. I mean...
Yeah, you know, there was. Obviously it's abhorrent stuff because... You know, it was tough saying, like, I hope you die and all this sort of stuff. And it's just like, fucking, like, if you mean it, there's something wrong with you. If you're saying it because you're at, like, we all get angry about stuff, but saying stuff like that and adding, I don't know if they added him, but saying it on Twitter, it's just pointless, isn't it? It's just stupid. There's not much more you can say about it. As it turns out, it made no difference to the game anyway. Not that that would, you know, change that you should say it or not. It's like, just think before you type something out on your Twitter. It's going to be pointless.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Fun time videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I added a player on Twitter last night. I'm kind of disgracing myself. I I added a picture of the 2012 50 pence piece that explained the offside rule to Michy Batshuayi.
God's sake. I mean, oh dear. The thing is, I can't actually blame you for that. I really can't.
Do you know what? I actually felt bad about it this morning, and I tried to think, why is he offside a lot? And because he's one of those players that plays on the shoulder. We know that, like, from his first spell with us as well. He's toeing that line all the time. And I think the argument in favour of Batshuayi here is he's not getting game time. He's not building any sort of relationships with the players that are feeding him the ball. So the timing's just always off a bit because there's no synergy between them yet. There's no understanding between them yet. So, you know, again, if he plays more game times and more minutes, you'd expect to see that come. And then, you know, those marginal offsides will actually turn to really good runs that spring the offside trap and he gets chances to score goals. But, you know, I don't think that's me clutching at straws. He scored enough goals at a high enough level to say that this is more likely to be a bit of a blip in his form than, you know, something fundamentally wrong with the way he plays football.
But it does go back to that question that we quite rightly ask of squad management at times, doesn't it? Of players not getting any game time at all, not getting minutes. And you very rarely see these players who aren't playing pop up in under 23 games either to try and get match time. It's on the odd occasion, or usually when they're coming back from injury. But the players who aren't injured don't get any match time at all. And, you know, we joke about, you know, JP joining and not getting any match time, and it's only two games into it. But, you know, Roy doesn't really believe in any real form of rotation. You know, subs, if subs are made, it's very late on in a game, because he seems reluctant to risk what he's seeing out on the pitch. Even if what he's seeing out on the pitch is crap, he still doesn't seem to want to risk changing the setup too much. So I think I worry about that. I think it's damaging, and I think that has an impact. But there we go. Let's not moan too much after a win, eh? So let's talk about something positive that we haven't covered yet. Esgeth, it's over to you with the Cahill goal. Talk about his movement. Talk about the ball in. A good set piece.
Yeah, what a change it makes to have someone who can deliver that on a fairly consistent basis with Eze. It was a great delivery. It's right where you want it to be. A good run from Cahill, who lost his marker. I think Michy sort of steps in front of his marker a little bit, and there's some debate on Twitter whether he meant to do it or not. I'm not 100% sure he did, because he was looking at the ball and he was sort of moving backwards, but either way, a good run by Cahill, and it just got it was right in the spot that you wanted it to be. And he did a celebration of hitting the corner flag off, which is JP's signature move. And Terence keeps winding me up by saying that he's never going to do it in a Palace shirt. So I'm going to have to make do with Cahill doing it, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. But
hey, don't share my inner WhatsApp group messages with people where I may have sent the picture of the current Palace corner flag now and what it will look like at the end of the season as exactly the same picture. enough strikers assigned for us now and not score goals. That's just my natural assumption.
Yeah, I don't think you're being overly negative or unrealistic there at all. But there we are. I don't know what that says about us. So look, for second half wasn't the most exciting. I think even Roy was sort of fairly, you know, philosophical about the fact that we started badly, then played quite well, and then weren't great in the second half. We really did invite quite a lot of pressure. One superb save from Guaita with a really clever reaction to, I think, Fraser's shot, wasn't it? I just say Fraser. I keep saying Frazier. It's Patrick's fault, because he says it. I thought that was a pretty key moment. You know, you feared right at the end the late Andy Carroll header, but that didn't go in, and we're okay. But we've talked about the Townsend miss, and that's the only other major thing I wanted to pick it out, other than Wilf's injury talent. Terence, he's got, you know, he's grabbed his hamstring quite early, and then for some reason he doesn't go down straight away. Carries on trying to run around the pitch, and you just worry if he's not done more damage there. He was really angry, and I assume it was the injury rather than the fact that he wasn't taken off earlier, because, you know, he could have taken control there and kind of sat down a little bit. But yeah, I mean, obviously really concerning times that Wilf's now injured.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing we can hang on to here really is that his powers of recovery are incredible. He's only ever really had one big layoff in his career, which I think we all agree with hindsight probably did him a favour, because he bulked up quite a lot in that time. He went off a skinny boy and come back a very big man. So, yeah, we just got to hope that he recovers from it quick. Maybe it's not as bad as we thought, and we're just doing it as a precaution, getting him off the field. But he certainly looks very angry when he came off, which suggests that it probably is a little bit more sinister. But, I mean, yeah, we've got to have other players step up to the plate when Wilf's gone. I feel like we're always going to be a way worse off team without him in it, because he's one of the best players in the Premier League. So we're obviously going to miss him. But, you know, we've got the likes of Eze now. We've got obviously superstar Jairo Riedewald in the middle of the park. So, yeah, we'll have to find ways to cope, and probably won't, as usually is the case.
Have you turned into me?
channeled my inner Hesketh, yeah.
Well, we've got no Jeff at the moment to come in either. So I laughed about this, but everyone was getting really excited when Wilf went off to a point. You know, obviously everyone was gutted that Wilf went off, but on the watch along, everyone's like, oh, Roy just said JP's coming on, JP's coming on. And then Patrick went, it's going to be Andros. But, yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, okay. I dare say we'll talk about it in the Leeds preview, who we think will come in the next game. If it's longer term than that, hopefully we get a few more bodies back and Roy has the chance to choose. So let's end the kind of match review by just talking about the general reaction on social media, because, you know, there was, I don't want to do the divisive thing of saying there's a Roy in and a Roy out camp, but there is. And, you know, people were looking quite rightly and saying it's great that we've won two games back to back. But a lot of people kind of on the attack and saying, you know, this is proof that Roy's the man. Let's give him another year. And Roy's obviously quoted as being quite, you know, probably his most revealing comments so far on whether he was bothered about getting another deal. So if we start there, Hesketh, what do you make of Roy's comments, him basically saying that he's not bothered, that either, you know, the club will come to him and say, do you want to do another year? And if they don't, they don't, and so be it.
Yeah, I mean, he sort of changed tack, hasn't he? From, I think before, he just didn't really want to talk about it, or, you know, as a topic. Whereas, like you say, yesterday, he sort of answered it pretty directly. I mean, it wasn't him saying yes, no, whatever, but it was a pretty direct answer. It'd be interesting what we do. I think we, certainly on our pods, are sort of the opinion that the likelihood is he's going to be replaced in the summer. Obviously, it's no guarantee that's going to happen. I think if we said, look, we want you for another year, he would take it. Absolutely. I must admit, I'd worry for Patrick O'Connor's health if that happened. but yeah, it's always interesting. Like, I try to go on Twitter a little bit less after a game, win or loss, really, because it always seems to end up in like a bit of a bar fight between the Roy in and the Roy out. And I think when we win, it's easier to say, like, actually, that we do win these games under Roy. We do sort of do quite well against the teams in and around us. And then when we lose, it's more people saying, like, we should be doing better than this. I'm one of those people, to be fair. So it's tough, and I don't want to go on Twitter after we've won and get on a bit of a downer because people are like digging each other out about whether he should stay or not. So I don't know whether he's going to stay. I still think that we should make a change in the summer, to be honest. And I know there's always that sort of Charlton, curvishly sort of angle where careful what you wish for. But at the same time, I sort of want to be entertained a bit more. And I think with the players we've got, and if we recruit well in the summer, then entertainment doesn't necessarily mean end up in League One like the Charlton lot down the road.
Yeah, I'd look, we've got an opportunity, I think, next season with the rebuild we have to do, that, you know, you can build, we've got some young players in that team where you can start to build a team around them. If we keep hold of Wilf as well, if you take Riedewald, Eze and Zaha And then you've obviously got a good goalkeeper in Vicente Guaita as well. If you start building a team around that, you can, that's the sort of players where you can start to impose your style of play on teams. You know, once, you know, Eze just gets better with every game that he plays, as does Riedewald. We know what Zaha can do. If you start getting them fully confident and, you know, the more Premier League experience in them and you're building a team around them, you can really, we can start to play a different style of football that will really, you know, will be the counter-attacking days solely. You know, we're struggling to break teams down when they sit against us. So those are the sort of players that can open the team up. And it would be disappointing to see another season wasted away with those players under Roy, where it's just, you know, set up not to lose games and stay in the Premier League. And you've got to take that gamble sometimes. And we've talked about many times, maybe that he'll be once bitten twice shy because of the Frank de Boer scenario. But with the young players we've got, and with the philosophy is to bring in more young players. We haven't seen Mateta yet, but, you know, he scores pretty much one in two in the Bundesliga, which is not, it's not a farmer's league, is it? So, you know, maybe he comes in and does well. So we've got an opportunity here to kick on. And it seems like a natural stopping point with Roy to take him out and bring someone else in that is going to look to play a different style of football. But whether that ends up happening, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's a tough choice. And, you know, I got accused of thinking Roy's useless on Twitter. And, I mean, I won't ever get into those kinds of arguments, certainly not when people are presenting an opinion that I don't hold to me and saying, you know, you just think that. It doesn't really seem like a worthwhile way to spend my time. But, you know, I have criticised Roy and I do want him gone. And I wanted him gone before the end of the season. I think winning two games on the bounce that, you know, that we needed to win, in my view. And you know, we needed to win those because of poor results previously and poor form previously. So, but that does take that element of pressure off. You know, we're going to have to go some not to pick up enough points to be relatively comfortably staying in the league from here. So that takes that little bit of pressure off of any kind of immediacy of dealing with the situation. But, you know, it still comes down to the point, as a pragmatic manager, you know, working with a squad to get you enough points to stay in the league year on year. You know, Roy is an excellent manager for that. But is Roy the manager that you want to put in charge of the job of rebuilding a squad at this point in his career and at this club, given what we're seeing? I think there has been a gradual decline in how we've played. And I think that really does need addressing. And as you say, Terence, it's the time to do that. Everything's kind of come together to do that. There are players in the squad whose contracts probably won't be renewed and give us the chance to bring younger, fresher, different players in that might suit a different system and a different manager. Otherwise, you end up trying to make the change when you haven't got the flexibility to give that new manager what they want. It's all aligned for the perfect time to change. And it might not work, but it might not work anyway. If you don't, doing nothing is just as risky as doing something.
We shall see. I think the only overarching thing is, with the current financial climate, the way it is with COVID and everything, is it worth taking the risk? You know, if you keep Roy for another season, you're guaranteed another Premier League mid-table finish, which will mean another 120 million in the coffers. With us wanting to build a stadium, we've got a lot of big wages now coming off the wage bill before this season's over. With, you know, Myers gone, Benteke will be signing a new contract, but at massively reduced terms compared to what he's on now. Saka will be gone. So we're opening up a lot of wage budget, which, you know, the aim will be to replace with younger players who won't be on as much wages as them. So they'd be doing everything they can to just make sure there's as much cash flow as possible into the club. And, you know, Roy, you can do that with him. 1 year contract's not going to be too expensive to keep him on and things like that. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if we kept him, but as we've said, it seems like a natural point to part ways and look to the future.
Indeed. Well, that is match review done. It's time for the preview, I guess, Terence.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how we're going to win. Leeds, who have lost again tonight, I may add, without watching the game, undoubtedly the commentators were raving about the best coach in the world and how Leeds, well, you know, they're going to win the European Cup next year, apparently. But no, so obviously we have a fantastic performance against Leeds last time around, and with the way we've been talking about Roy Adair, Hambo, the way Leeds play football, they're kind of the perfect opponent for Roy's style of football, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. That really came across last time we played, didn't it? You know, you could almost, I think even Roy almost had glee in his voice in the pre-match press conferences, because he was just kind of saying, yeah, well, you know, they're an open side. They play attractive football, all the while smiling, thinking this is exactly what we want. They're going to leave all sorts of space. They're not going to double or triple mark Eze or Wilf. Happy days, you know? And, you know, will they have...
He must have looked at that. He looked at the Leeds lineup, and he's like, does that say 3-3-3-1 that they're playing? Roy's just like, thank you very much. I'll deal with that very easily, thank you. But yeah, so I mean, Leeds are hit and miss. You don't know what you're going to get with them, right? And you only have to look at their goals for and goals against, and how those goals have been spread across games is absolutely insane, really. And you know, fair play to that manager. He's come and he's unforgivingly played his style of football. He's not tried to change it through fear of what teams can do to him. He's, you know, living and dying by his philosophy. And it has been entertaining at times, but it's also been incredibly naive at times. I mean, Heskey, if we approached the game probably in the same way we did last time, which was a 4-4-2, which in, I will point out, a Riedewald did start in that game as well.
King Gyro. This is just a Gyro appreciation podcast at this point. I think we probably will line up the same as we did formation-wise at home. I suppose the only thing you take into account with Leeds is you just hope that they don't score loads. Obviously, you think that every game, but, you know, in the game when we beat them at Selhurst, they had a goal disallowed, didn't they? Which was quite tough.
I mean, that's the most ridiculous VAR decision, I think, along with the Southampton one last night. But
you sort of think, like, if that doesn't get disallowed, it's a very different game. Because I think they are a team where, obviously, they just keep attacking, don't they? And the more their confidence is up, the more likely it is they're going to score 3 or 4. But yeah, I mean, it's a shame that we're not going to have Wilf. I think Wilf would be really good in a game like that. But as you say, now we've got Eze, who's another similar player. He can make something out of nothing, and if he finds space, and certainly if you give him space to work in, he can do some real, real damage. So we have to, I think it's set up for Eze to really take the ball and run with it on Monday.
Okay, so Hambo, is it, with Zaha missing, will it be time? Will Mateta finally see some minutes?
No, no, of course not. I really hope I'm wrong. I really do. Because if you think about it, it feels like the right call, doesn't it? You know, give them something to think about. They're going to be, you know, if they're doing their job, which you assume they will as a team, they'll be thinking, right, no Zaha. So we don't have that focus, right? We can kind of play our normal game. We don't need to worry about how we got ripped apart last time. Let's focus on Eze. And if they take Eze out of the equation for us by double marking, staying tight on him the whole game, you look across the rest of the team, the fact that we've got injuries all over, and we might struggle. We might struggle to create the same kind of opportunities we did last time out. So throwing in that bit of a wild card, you know, he's a big unit. He's got a bit of pace about him, a bit of trickery. It just seems like the way to go. But it's not the safe option. It's a gamble. And that's why I don't think we'll see it.
Well, I think that looking at the lineup that played in the game where we beat them 4-1, it could be the lineup that ends up playing tomorrow, San Zaha. So you've got Guaita in goal, Klein, Van Aanholt, Dan and Kouyaté, Eze, MacArthur, Riedewald, Townsend, Zaha, Ayew. So it's not going to be overly too different from that. So I'm not too worried about the injuries that we have in terms of still being able to carve open leads with all the spaces that they leave, because that's what our game is set up to do. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, in an ideal world, I think he puts Batshuayi alongside Mateta and then gives Batshuayi a little bit more of a free role to roam around a bit, because he does like to do that. He likes to link play with nice little flicks in and around the sort of centre circle and stuff like that. So if you allow Batshuayi to carry on with that sort of style, and then, you know, have Mateta as more of a focal point next to him, then who knows? Again, you know, you've got the unknown quantity there for Leeds as well, and it really could it could lead to good things. But Hesketh is going to be Ayew and Benteke up front, isn't it?
Yeah, I was like, that's a lovely little fantasy you've just told us about there. I think it probably will be Ayew and Benteke. Bats looked a bit pissed off when he got subbed yesterday, but I don't really think he had much of a argument about why he shouldn't be taken off. I think Ayew and Benteke is probably the way it's going to go. Yeah.
Do you feel, Hambo, with light of what we talk about Batshuayi, it might be one game too early to drop him? You've got, you know, he did pick up a goal against West Ham. He's given Benteke a few cracks at the whip when it's not been going overly too well for him. So do you think he'll get one more try, or can you see Benteke or Mateta maybe coming back in for him?
I think it's a really hard one to call, because I would like him to get more game time in some ways, but he was so shit against Newcastle that I'm struggling to find any real justification other than the let's give him another game, another 90 minutes, and hope it all clicks for him. Yeah, he did get the goal the other day, and he was clearly delighted with it. But you know, he spent a large proportion of the game against Newcastle offside, and we kind of joke about it, but it isn't a joke really. It's you know, to be standing in an offside position for the majority of the game, let alone being caught offside when you're making a run. It just, you know, something's not quite right there. You know, yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm expecting, if Benteke plays, then great. But I was actually expecting it would be Townsend would come in on the right hand side. Jordan Ayew goes up top, and we might see Batshuayi again. But having listened to you guys talk, I think probably Benteke in for Batshuayi as well. So, yeah.
I mean, I worry the thing when Batshuayi's on the field and Benteke's not, or obviously I'm speculating about how good Mateta is at defending corners, but when Batshuayi's on the field, we lose something in our own area from set pieces and defending, but Benteke's certainly become a good defender at the near post from set pieces. He never used to be that way, Hesketh, if you remember the 5-4 at Swansea. Certainly, it's something he's learned over his time under various, you know, Premier League, good old English Premier League managers that have taught him the ways of defending. But Leeds aren't a set piece threat in that sense, where they've only scored from four this season, which is actually one less than, or one fewer than we've managed to score from. So not too much of a worry there. But I don't know. I hope he gets another shot. I think everyone wants Batshuayi to be a success and it to work out. But so just for that point, I'd like to see him get one more game and try and, you know, in a game where he should, because of the way Leeds play, should get a few chances to put some goals away, and hopefully that will breed some confidence. But alas, we will have to wait and see. Hambo, in terms of Jai Riederwald, is obviously, you know, Luke is going to be the first name on the team sheet in the middle. Will he play if anyone else is fit? After that performance against Newcastle, it's going to be far less easy for Roy to just drop him and not face some sort of backlash from, not just from fans on social media, because I'm sure he doesn't read or care about that, but within the squad itself as well. He seems to have a lot of respect within the squad, demand a lot of respect. Players seem to rate him, and then to have a performance like that and then get left out would surely start to get some rumbling going on within the squad.
Yeah, it sends a terrible, terrible message, doesn't it, to everybody, really, that, you know, really it doesn't matter how you play. I'm going to pick my favourites every single time anyway. And we get that feeling a lot, you know, throughout the course of the season anyway. But you've got to reward Gyro for what he did in that game. He's got to keep his place. And it's really important that we have somebody with that energy. You know, and MacArthur, you know, if he's playing one game a week, he can do that. And he does give you that sort of box-to-box element at times. But not just that, the number of tackles that he puts in, it's so, so important. He breaks up so much play. Without MacArthur, it puts the onus on Luca to do that. And at times he has struggled this season on that. So, but how can you possibly drop Gyro after that performance. It was everything we needed from a central midfielder. So I don't think we'll see it because it's so nonsensical to think it'll happen.
Okay, good. Last one we'll touch on is Patrick van Aanholt's obviously got back-to-back games here. Hesketh, kind of a mixed bag of a performance against Newcastle. Enough to keep his place, or can you see Mitchell perhaps coming back into this one? Oh, he's 30. He's got the hat trick. He's got the mute hat trick.
I should have muted when I said fuck. Sorry. I was thinking about this because, on the one hand, against a team like Leeds, you would say, well, we'd want a more defensive, solidly defensive player, which is Mitchell. But then at the same time, you think, well, if they are going to leave a lot of space, then you can see PVA bombing down the wing and getting the crosses in, like he did in the build-up to Gyro's goal. So I really don't know where he's going to go with the left-back. My preference would always be Mitchell because I actually think him getting forward is better than PVA's defending. Although PVA's been all right the last two games. I don't think he's been particularly bad. So trying to get inside Roy's head for that is beyond me at this point, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think his defending last night was pretty decent. So I have a few clearances, most interceptions of any Palace player. So, it was certainly his defensive side was a lot better last night. I actually thought he had a decent game against Wolves as well, but my mind just constantly goes back to Adama Traore nutmegging him so disgustingly.
<Yep.
laughs> I felt so bad for him because he even turned around just like, what am I supposed to do against that? Like we've seen Zaha down the years do it to so many great fullbacks, you know. So you got a feel for him.
Can I just ask you on PVA, because you mentioned he's had two decent games. Do you think with him being out of the side and it being pretty clear that there's a massive difference between how he's positioning himself at left back since he came back in than he was previously, do you think that that's been made abundantly clear to him that he has to actually play left back?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised because we've talked about already. We were joking about taking Riedewald off for coming out of his his angles on the pitch. You know, his zones. You should just be staying within your zones. And I think there's been a lot. You can hear it with players on the field now that you can hear what they're saying to each other. And too often in games, particularly from James McCarthy, you can hear him, or James McCarthy, sorry, screaming at Pat van Aanholt to get back. And it's his laziness of getting back that's a problem. And he wants to be the modern day wing back, full back type person, but he just doesn't have the engine to do it. So he's quite happy to get forward, but then he won't bust a nut getting backwards. So I think it's probably more of a, he's been asked to pick and choose his times to go forward as opposed to actually just constantly trying to get that overlap, which, you know, leads to him struggling later in games and getting caught out of position a lot more because we were conceding a lot of goals late in games. And there was gaping holes in the left-back position when that was occurring. So I think it's more probably been told to conserve your energy a bit and, pick and choose your moments. And which, if that leaves him, you know, sacrificing a little bit going forward, but in return for a little bit more defensive solidity, I don't think Palace fans are ever really going to moan about that. We understand that we under Roy, we work off a solid base, and the problems for Roy come when his solid base is no longer solid, as it's been this season on so many occasions, and clean sheets go by the wayside, and it looks bad when that's the whole game plan that you have is to keep it tight and nick games by one goal, which we did so successfully last season many times before the lockdown. And perhaps we're getting into that sort of Roy Hodgson, you know, 3-6 game sort of run where, you know, we stack on the points that ultimately keep us safe for the season. I think that's enough. Best gift prediction, what are you going for?
2-0 Leeds.
and Hambo.
He's genuinely nicked my prediction. I'll have to go 2-1 Leeds.
Oh, wow. I'm going to go 3-1 Palace. I think we're tailor made to just beat them. Really. I don't I, I Will that manager learn? I don't think he's a manager to change tactically the way he's going to play. He's going to play his style, and that's it. So we'll see. I could be wrong. That is bold without Zaha. Thinking about it, that's very bold without Zaha. But hey, I've said it now. It's out there in the ether. So we'll have to see what happens. Right. That's your lot for this week. So what's the plan for the match report on the weekend, Hambo?
Well, I think we'll be having to do it on the Tuesday night, I think.
Oh, of course, yeah. So we're back again. Yeah. It'll be 3 weeks running.
It will. Amazing. Well, it's better like this, isn't it? We're the best ones. So
say that dun, 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 dun. So long as some of us remember to take ourselves off mute.
So it looks like it'll be the same setup again then, maybe with Albert, who knows. But it's Crystal Palace against Burnley at Selhurst will be the next preview, and we'll obviously be doing the match report against Leeds involved in that one due to the Monday night kickoff. So yeah, look forward to that. Hambo, thanks for joining in again.
No problem, loved every second of it.
And Heskiff, thank you so much, Mr. Mute. Just kidding. Right, yeah. So anyway, until next week, everyone, up the Palace.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by pitchdmm.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.